This is The Guardian.
Regid Ahmed here on Gadigal land with the full story. The coalition has taken Australia and weaponising the politics of power prices.
Sarah, Australians deserve affordable energy and they don't have it under the Labor government. And they deserve responsible emissions reduction and they don't have that either.
Today, climate and environment editor Adam Morton on whether the coalition's claims stack up and why it drags Australia backwards in the battle against climate change. It's Thursday, the 20th of November.
Hello, Lenore Taylor here, editor of Guardian Australia. I want to take a moment to thank you for listening. Like all our journalism, this podcast isn't bankrolled by billionaires or shareholders. It's open to everyone and it's funded by readers and listeners who believe in independent, original reporting. As we prepare to cover 2026, we're running our annual end-of-year supporter appeal. If you value our work, including podcasts like this one, and you're in a position to contribute, please visit theguardian.com/support. And thank you.
Hi, Adam. Thank you for joining us. It's really good to see you again.
Hey, Regid. Good to be here.
It's been a really big week with all of the reporting dissecting the coalition's decision to drop the net zero target. And I wonder what it's been like for you watching it all unfold, because you've reported for years on Australia's climate wars.
Yeah. I mean, I have been doing this for far too long. And the general sense was, how many times are we going to be back here? It's sort of Groundhog Day on top of Groundhog Day of arguments that are really taking us well back on addressing this major problem, that every time we think that we have some sort of consensus that we're going to tackle the climate crisis, then we go back here to these fights that are largely based on misinformation. And really, I mean, the other thing I felt last week was just there's so much spectacular nonsense here, and so much of what's been said doesn't stand up to close examination, but we're, you know, back through the looking glass into nonsense land, really.
We're going to have a look at some of those claims, but I wonder from your perspective, I know Malcolm Turnbull has suggested this, do you think the coalition has now taken us back to those climate war debates? Are we back in it?
Well, I think you could make a good case that they never really ended, to be honest, but they've certainly flared up and I think will become more acute again. I mean, the reason I say I think they never really ended is that while the coalition in 2021, when Scott Morrison was Prime Minister, signed up to a target of reaching net zero emissions by 2050. They've never backed it beyond having that line. Individual MPs, I'm sure, have supported it, but you can tell they've never really supported it because they've never had any policies to try to help get there. And they've opposed every one of Labor's measures since Labor came into power to try to reduce emissions. That is not a party or parties that are committed to net zero. Now they're just sort of back to being a little bit more honest about it, I think.
Yeah. Let's take a look at some of their main claims now. Now that caused power prices to go up. Are they right?
Most experts would say no. There is a lot of complicating factors that they can hide behind here. And clearly that is going to be the key message. Susan Lee, the Liberal leader, we're talking on Wednesday. And today she's been out in the media saying, I just know the cost is blowing out under Labor, which is a simple line, and I think we'll hear it again and again, and we'll see if it's effective. But the reality is that the increases in price since Labor came to power and since the net zero target was introduced have largely been due to issues with fossil fuels. We had a really big spike in 2022, about a 20% jump in power prices, largely due to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which sent global gas prices skyrocketing. And gas is the most expensive fuel that we use to create electricity, so that often sets the price for other fuels. It had a huge impact. And around the same time, we had some issues with our coal supply here in Australia. There were floods that reduced coal supply to coal power plants, and we had a lot of outages at coal power plants. That led to less competition, less generation of electricity in the market. Prices went up. There's other factors playing into it. There are new costs for distribution, networks, transmission lines. Inflation is going to see prices increase. And we have the unfortunate situation where the Labor government promised a decrease in power prices that they just couldn't deliver. They said prices would come down by $275 by 2025. They obviously went up significantly. It's an absolutely justifiable issue on which to criticize them. But the reality is that that has not happened. The fact that it has not been met has not been due to renewable energy. Look, politicians just need to be honest with Australians that we have to rebuild the power system. That's going to come at a cost over time. Study after study has found that renewable energy plus firming support from largely batteries, bit of pumped hydro, bit of gas when we need it because we can rely on it, will be the cheapest option in the long term. But there'll be bumps on the road. It's a tricky project that we're trying to take on here. And it's hard to prove to people that something is cheaper than an alternative that they're not seeing. So yes, prices are probably not going to come down. Maybe they will year on year occasionally when we have good years. But over time, electricity prices, like the price of everything, is going to increase. But the evidence is that renewable energy will be the cheapest thing we can do. The coalition doesn't accept that.
So is the argument that renewables will bring power prices down, but just not yet, not for a while?
No, not that they'll bring prices down. I think that we can't say that with confidence, just that they'll be cheaper than the alternatives.
Part of the difficulty with what the coalition has been talking about this week is how confusing it is, because they talk about they are interested in bringing emissions down, but they don't seem to be talking about what it will take to do that. So does that mean the coalition is really interested in bringing emissions down? Like what is like their core message now?
Well, it's a confused message and a confused position. They are saying that they would bring emissions down at the same rate as other OECD countries. Other OECD countries have emissions targets and often acting in a much more advanced way than what the coalition allows. There's no real clarity about how they would bring emissions down. They have no policies to do that at this point. There's no clarity about the pace at which they would bring emissions down. And if they're not aiming to get to net zero emissions, there's no real clarity on why they would bring emissions down. Their argument is a thinly veiled argument against acting on climate change.
Right.
And the evidence of what we need to do to address the climate crisis globally and within Australia, and the pace at which we need to take action, is pretty clear.
And that brings us nicely to another claim. Basically, it sounds like the coalition is saying it's just too expensive to do anything about climate change. And one of the claims is Nationals leader David Littleproud said net zero emissions targets cost the taxpayers $9 trillion. So the claim is net zero is too expensive for the economy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is he right?
Yeah. Well, so this line is drawn from an organisation called Net Zero Australia, which is a collection of academics at Australian and US universities. That figure did appear in one of their reports, but the Nationals are misrepresenting it and the Coalition are misrepresenting it. And Net Zero Australia has issued a statement saying that's a misrepresentation of what we found. The true cost of acting to reach net zero emissions would be a small fraction of that, they say about $300 billion. And then also not factoring into that, the cost of not acting. So the $9 trillion, all you really need to know about it is that the people who are being quoted say that's not true, how it's being described.
So has the argument essentially come down to we can pay more now to do the right thing in the long term, or the coalition arguing it's just too expensive right now, leave it, and we can catch up later. We'll deal with it later once the rest of the world has come around.
I mean, to some extent, but I'm not sure I would even characterize the coalition's position that way. You know, there is a lot of rhetoric that is contradictory in what they're saying, but the reality, their position they're proposing on the limited detail we have at the moment is for no action. And despite it being a complicated geopolitical position right now, the world is a complicated place. Donald Trump has obviously gone backwards on acting on climate in the US, and there are other challenges. Most of the international community is still acting to reduce emissions, not fast enough based on what scientists tell us, but there is action taking place. And we know the cost of inaction is significantly greater than the cost of acting. I mean, I wouldn't say it's a question of action now or delay. Delay would be clearer if there was a clear picture of what the coalition wanted to do at what time frame on a necessary scale, and they made the case for that. But they just have not done that. It's just this, another version, to come back to where we began, of the same story we've been talking about now for more than 20 years, which is most of one side of politics making arguments about why we shouldn't take climate change seriously and act on it. This is just the latest version of that. And I guess given how much further down the road we are now, it's got some stiff competition, but it's almost more galling because it's really just flying in the face of all the evidence.
So ultimately, is it the reality that we cannot maintain our commitment to the Paris Agreement to reduce global temperatures while also keeping fossil fuels going for longer if net zero targets are too expensive, that the two can't be true, but that is what the coalition is saying?
Well, the point of the Paris Agreement and the work done subsequently is to get to global net zero emissions. And the scientific evidence is that it should be by around 2050 if we're to avoid the worst of climate change and meet the targets that were set in the Paris Agreement. And for countries like Australia, probably even sooner than that, because we're a wealthy country who can afford to go faster. So yes, the coalition's position is definitely at odds with the Paris Agreement. Doesn't mean they'll be kicked out of the agreement because there's no mechanism for that to happen, but they're in breach of it. So, I mean, I think a valid question for them is, why do you want to stay in the Paris Agreement and say you're supporting it when you're working against it?
We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Karishma Luthria, one of the producers here at Full Story. We're so glad you're here. Each episode is a team effort, researching, interviewing, scripting, editing, and sound design. And we make it free, just like all Guardian journalism. We're not a PU, so if you can, please visit theguardian.com/support and help keep Full Story and our journalism open for all.
Looking for the perfect Christmas gift? Baileys is the perfect way to elevate your treat time. Smooth, creamy, and always indulgent, it turns any moment into something special. Bring home the festive favourite, gift a bottle of Baileys this season.
Adam, what are the consequences for business investment in renewables now that we've lost that bipartisan support for net zero? Is industry tearing its hair out?
I mean, there's a lot of people tearing their hair out, and yes, that's broadly true. Look, it's very hard to quantify, but the renewable energy industry, its representatives have been very strong, and they've put a statement out today saying this lack of bipartisan agreement, again, really could deter investors just at a time in which we're trying to build out a renewable energy network and get other green industry investments in Australia, especially when there is international competition for those dollars, right? And they might look at Australia and go, well, if there's a change of government, we don't know if this whole thing will be torn up and there won't be support for what we're doing anymore. So is that a risk we want to take? We don't know at this stage to the extent to which that will actually deter investment, but logically, it's a real possibility.
So there's a cost for all of us. I mean, separate to the politics, there's a price we pay for not having bipartisan support in terms of our ability to move towards renewables.
Oh, absolutely. It just delays action. And in the meantime, it's not like we're running back towards investing in coal. That would be, you know, disastrous from a climate point of view. But there's also just no appetite for it. So what we saw largely when the coalition was in power last time was there wasn't new investment because no one was really investing in fossil fuels because they didn't believe that had a future. But that investment in renewable energy, other than some to meet a new target, slowed up. So we are now trying to accelerate that as a country. We need to be investing in the power grid. The current one's not going to last forever. And if we slow that down, I mean, that really increases the risks of problems with electricity reliability, and that spills over across the community and the economy.
Just finally, Adam, I want to end on Labor. Because while we're focused on the coalition, we're not really talking about Labor and what the government is actually doing on net zero. Now, Susan Lee says Labor's net zero targets aren't even realistic. Is she right?
You know, of all the things that the coalition is saying, that may be the criticism with the most validity. Not that they're not realistic in that we can't get to net zero emissions in this country. I mean, it's feasible and we can do it, but it's a huge challenge. There's a lot we don't know about how Australia would get there yet. Some of that's understandable, you know, that technologies are still developing and this work is going to continue to evolve over time. But one of the issues with what the coalition has done is that we are not talking about what the actual government of the country is doing and not doing. They have made some strides since being elected in 2022. They have a plan for the power grid, really challenging to do, but they've explained what they want to do. They're trying to underwrite a big expansion of renewable energy. There's a whole bunch of other areas in the economy we don't really know what they're going to do yet. And we don't have a clear picture on what we're going to do about Australia's economic future away from fossil fuel exports, which continue to be backed by both parties in an ongoing sense. We don't really have a formed out plan for how we're going to adapt to inevitable climate change that is coming our way. These would seem like pretty important and reasonable questions for the parliament to be asking, for an opposition to be asking, for the media to be focusing on. But while we are talking about this, what is really a sideshow, because it's the opposition who is miles away from government at this stage all the time, we're not having that chat. And it sort of shifts the focus of the discussion away from where the centre of it really should be. And, you know, if the conversation isn't in the right place, that will cost all of us.
Adam, thank you so much for taking us through a really complicated week in the politics of climate policy.
It's a pleasure.
That was climate and environment editor Adam Morton. You can find more of his work on theguardian.com, and we've linked his latest piece on the Full Story page. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Camilla Hannan and Shadi Khan Saif. Sound design and mixing by Joe Koning. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Regid Ahmed. See you soon.